You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Happy Thursday. We're back and doing it. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. I am your man on the ground, Isaiah Hull, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group. And since it is Thursday, we are doing the Michigan mailbag. So let's get right to it. Starting with our leaders and best, James Crudup at James Crudup 6. If you feel you are in a very good spot with Bryce Underwood, do you slow play the other QBs or take whoever is willing to commit first? That's a really difficult proposition, right? Because now you're depending on what recruiting service you're going with, I believe On3 is the one that has him as the number one overall guy in 2025, regardless of position. He is the number one quarterback, I believe, across the board. So, yes, you obviously want to try to get a guy like him. I think that, yeah, you kind of hedge your bets a little bit, but not so much that you end up in the Dante Moore situation, right? Obviously, they're recruiting guys like McIntyre out of Tennessee, Montgomery out of Ohio. There are plenty of prospects, high-end prospects that they are going after in 2024. But yeah, you want to be careful, and it's you make it obvious to Bryce Underwood that, hey, we want you, but there's also the chance that we're not going to make the same mistake that we made in 2023 with Dante Moore. And Underwood does seem like he wants to take his time. I mean, we're pretty far away from 2025. Granted, J.J. McCarthy had committed at this point in his recruitment, I believe, or around this point. I believe it was May of 2019 when he had committed. So you hope to kind of not, you know, because you don't want to strong arm a guy, but you also want to let him know, like, hey, this is what our intentions are. We have to figure out a way to make this work. So it's a balancing act, and it's a difficult one, no less. Josh Barr at Jadicky, did you see the report of Michigan coaches helping Georgia game plan for Alabama in the title game that is going around? Thoughts on that? I didn't, and I actually never, that's the first I'm hearing about it. It's interesting, especially just kind of considering, you know, it's, you would have thought it maybe would have gone the other way, right? Like, because, I mean, Michigan had a game plan for Georgia. So it's like, what, you know, how are they doing that? It's just interesting that's how that went. But no, I don't know anything about that. That type of thing, I think, happens more often than people think. You know, we've heard of, you know, think of Mark D'Antonio went and took trips down to visit Nick Saban to you know, stuff like that. That always happens. Just you get, they try to get intel from each other and stuff like that. My brother in metal, M. Wolf 21. Michael Wolf. I forgot the Michael Wolf part. I'm very tired today. I don't know what the deal is. Lack of sleep. That's what it is. Are the recruiting results because of the recent success or increasing NIL or both? I don't think Michigan's increasing the NIL. I think it's the recent success, and I think that they're finding enough guys where the transfer, or they have enough NIL where it's not going to, like, you know, completely get guys to write, you know, say I'm not going there. They have enough, right? But I think that it's the transformational part mixed with enough NIL, mixed with the recent success, mixed with the development at different positions. I think that that's why they are doing well. That said, I don't think that this class is like heads and shoulders above, like, say, like the 2017 class yet. You know, I know they're number one right now. It's just the difference is they're doing it earlier than they normally do. They aren't normally bringing in 16 commitments before we've even hit June. I don't think they've done that in the Jim Harbaugh era, if memory serves. So keep in mind with 2017 class, which ended up finishing number five, some of those guys didn't come aboard until late, right? Donovan Peoples-Jones, Ambry Thomas, those guys made late commitments just, you know, in December. That's, I think, the big difference. If those guys would have committed earlier, Michigan probably would have been in the same position having an early number one class. I don't think Michigan's going to finish number one, but it could surprise me. Maybe they are able to go out and get a, what's his name? Brandon Baker and a Ryan Wingo and a Justin Scott and completely change the narrative. I don't know that they will. I don't think they will. Jimmy Whitner at Jimmy Whitner 1. What, if any, packages or plays would you like to see this year? New wrinkles. I mean, obviously, I'd want to see a lot of Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards on the field at the same time. Heck, I mean, put like Blake Donovan and Kalel or Blake Donovan and Benjamin Hall, something like that, you know, like out on the field at the same time. And really make defenders have to figure out what to do. I mean, heck, you can do Blake Donovan, Roman Wilson, Colston Loveland, and, you know, I don't know what other options, Samaj Morgan, and just have a real speed option. There could be end arounds, it could be quarterback draw, it could, you know, run the ball, it could catch the ball. It's just so many different things that could happen. That's probably what. Number two, can you provide any update on the scoreboards? I can. I don't live in Ann Arbor anymore, so I haven't been there in quite some time. Well, not to that area. I've been to, within the last month, I've been to the storage unit, which I no longer have. Number three, can Zuri make a guest appearance this week? Let's see. Where is she? Zuri. All right. We're going to see. Now you have to go on camera, Jimmy. I think you're a listener mostly. So let's get Zuri on camera. Come here. All right. There we go. We got a Zuri guest appearance. Can you look at the camera? Look over there. Look over there. Nope, she can't. She's too crazy. Come here. Come here. So, for the video watchers, you get to see Zuri. You might get to hear her a little bit on the audio. And you got to see her face there, finally. So, alright, she's going to go back to being crazy somewhere else. No, she's going to stay here anyway. Relevant question next from KRT at FarmArc84. Does Zuri have an arch nemesis? For our dogs, that would be the squirrel. We'll ask that, and then we'll do the Michigan question. Anything that moves that's not a bird, I think, is pretty much her arch nemesis. Now, her nickname is one of her 2,000 nicknames that she has, but probably the primary one is Crazies. I speak in a lot of baby talk with the dog. So I add an S to everything. And Crazies is her nickname. And it came in large part A, just because of how excited she is to go out for a walk. Especially when I first got her, it still is pure jubilation. But the thing is it's, if her main nemesis is probably the bunny. I call squirrels bunny as well, but real bunnies, then squirrels, and somewhere in between there, if she sees a cat, that's, now dogs is a, it's, she's just way too excited, and it comes off not well to other dogs, and she's gotten in problems because of that. But she, almost every time she sees a dog, then she goes nuts. If it's a smaller dog, then she thinks it's a cat and she goes nuts. So that's the shortest answer to that I can give. Well, will the Michigan offense or defense be ranked higher at the end of the year? It's gonna be the defense. I'd like to say it's going to be the offense. That would, I think, be really, really, put Michigan in a really good spot. I think it's still going to be the defense. I mean, the defense has been right there anyway. For the offense to be like a top three unit, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, because we've seen Jim Harbaugh take the foot off the gas, depending on the opponent. So, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the case again. Finishing out segment one, Jonathan Joseph at J. Joseph 2156. What will it take for Michigan to be consistent? Of a recruiter, as consistent a recruiter as Ohio State, multiple five stars and top QBs in every class. Number one, I think you got to find a way to win a national championship. Because, I mean, Ohio State was recruiting, as long recruited better than Michigan. But I think that's where you see the uptick. And usually you see that with a lot of programs. Not all, certainly. But I think of like early Nick Saban, Alabama. They started recruiting immediately really well, but they weren't, I don't think they were getting like 6-5 stars a class until national championship, which came in what, year two or three? Something like that. Ohio State had a really big uptick after 2014. Like, they were recruiting really well, but it wasn't like 5-6, you know, they weren't like getting all these insane wide receivers the way that they are now. So I think that's it would help just getting to the national championship game this year, because now you're sitting there saying, like, we do this perennially. This is what we do. But I think you got to win one. And I think if you win one, dude, all bets are off. All right. We're going to continue on here in just one moment. But I want to double check one thing. All right, cool. I am good to go. Looking for a delicious snack but don't want all the sugar and calories? Then you need the best tasting protein bar ever built. You've got to try this. If you're like me and you want to make healthier snack choices but you don't want to compromise on taste, then I've got just the thing for you. Built Bars and Built Puffs. Built Bars are healthy and taste amazing. Seriously, they taste so amazing you won't think they're good for you. I have two at a time. I wish I had. I ordered a box. They should be here any day now. They've shipped. They're on route. But last night, around like 11, I was like, I want something so bad. I want a Built Bar so bad. But you've got to try it. That's what makes Built Bars so good. Well, for starters, they're covered 100% real dark chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. They come in unbelievable flavors like Cheerio, peanut butter, brownie, and cookies and cream. I got to tell you, the puffs are the best. I think that, like, those are just insane. I'm not even normally a marshmallow type fan, but those are so good. I'm not sure how Built does it, but these bars taste like a candy bar while maintaining amazing macros. What's even better is that they're healthy. Only 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar and a whopping 17 grams of protein. Now you don't need to wait to get a box. See, if it wasn't like 11 o'clock, I could have gone to my local Walmart or a Sam's Club and gotten my specialty, while I could still get my specialty flavors at Built.com. That's right. Head to your nearest Walmart today. Walk to the pharmacy section and grab yourself a box of Built Bars. This 4-bar box of cookies and cream bar, double chocolate bar, or coconut puff. Or if you're close to a Sam's Club, run in and grab a 13-bar box with our hit flavors, brownie batter puff and churro puff. You can thank me later. All right, we've got plenty more questions left as we head into segment two, going to our Victor's Valley and Mark Z at Mark Zimke leading us off with No Gym in the North. What is your most viewed or streamed podcast so far, and what was the content that made it go to the top? Honestly, I don't really know. We can maybe take a little figure out here. All right, so the most viewed one since we've done the YouTube, because I can sort by views. I mean, 100%. It's the post-game to the Ohio State win that I recorded the night after getting back from Columbus. That got 31,397 views so far. So that is the most viewed podcast. The post game of the MSU with the tunnel incident and all of that got 12,000. So that tells you the gap. I would say most of the podcasts get anywhere between 1,000 and 4,000 views. As far as listens, it does change quite a bit. I don't know that I can see exactly. The listens are very different here and there. Those are, I think, proprietary, so I'm not going to tell you what those necessarily get. I will say we consistently outperform in the listeners' end than we do the viewing end. The largest I'd seen, I don't remember the number. It was weirdly the only a couple months after launching the podcast. It was the there was a couple in the 2019 recruiting cycle with Dax Hill. That or 2018 recruiting cycle 2018 or yeah, it was 2019 recruiting cycle in 2018, right after we launched, where some of those Dax Hill episodes were getting like 6,000-7,000 listens, which was kind of insane. We were charting on iTunes and stuff like that. And that, keep in mind, those were like every episode of the week, right? So like we had like, I mean, a lot, you know, people were tuning into all of those. And it was kind of like one big episode split into like five. So that was like a really good week. But I think those aren't necessarily the highest. Those are the only ones because I don't pay. I don't pay that close attention to it. I just don't. I just try to do the best show that I can. And I mean that I try to be as awake as I can to do the best show that I can. And I just figure all that stuff will take care of itself. So as far as the content that makes it go to the top, well, obviously Dax Hill, Ohio State, those are the reasons why. But I don't try to be sensational and just add that type of stuff for everything. You know what I mean? I know when we've had Steve Lorenz on, those episodes have been huge as well. So I actually, I've been thinking about trying to get him back on here relatively soon. Clark at Blue for Life 8, just playing with ifs here, but if Sharon Moore were to leave next year for head coaching job, do you think Michigan looks within staff first for his replacement or look for an outside candidate? I know it's hard to say because we don't know who would be available, but just curious. I think they'd probably look inside. I would imagine Mike Hart would be the instant, like, hey, you want to keep doing, you know, keep doing this for us, keep some consistency. I could see them honestly going with like Grant Newsom as well. I mean, he's been a student of the game internally. He's kind of been, in a way, going through his own internship program. So I could see Grant Newsom being that guy as well. But yeah, I think they'd probably first try to look internally and then go external. Spencer Whitmore, I'm sad Hunter left, but as a person, I understand him maximizing his last 2 years of opportunity. Thoughts? I mean, 100%. I mean, I think he's got a point when he said, like, listen, if you get a, if you on out there in the regular real world get a, you know, are making less than six figures and now you got an opportunity to make seven, yeah, you're going to take it. The only thing I don't like is it that part of it has sullied the college sports part for me. I mean, not to the point where I'm turning away from it, of course, because what else am I going to turn to? High school sports? Not really. But the great thing about college sports in my eyes has long been that it is a lot about pride. I am 100% for guys being able to capitalize on NIL, but I don't want to see guys going to certain schools and leaving strictly because there's a better financial opportunity elsewhere. I just don't really want to see that, because I think that it can become pro in a hurry. That said, it's kind of like I was talking to my best friend about. I don't know how many of you have seen the Trey Parker, Matt Stone movie Basketball that came out in 1998. And thinking about how prescient even just the opening of that movie was, because at that time, a lot of the things that they were like predicting hadn't actually happened, but it kind of, if you were to watch it now, it would feel very much like, okay, yeah, that's stuff that, like, and even just the celebrations that they had of teams celebrating a touchdown, it's eerily similar to what things look like now compared to back then, that pre-TO, pre-Joe Horn, all of that. So I just don't want to go down the slope so far where this sport is completely unrecognizable. It needs to modernize, of course. I just don't want it to become unrecognizable. Ike Hamlet at Hamstand 87. What's the funniest thing Zuri has ever done, naughty or otherwise? Funniest thing that she's done? I don't know. She's very silly all the time. And it's pretty consistent. So I don't know if there's like one thing that she did. Now, when I had a potbelly pig, growing up, my mom got him my senior year of high school and he passed away in 2014, which is actually, that was the hardest thing I'd really gone through. And I've been through some hard stuff, but I love that pig that much. I know that you asked about Zuri. I will tell you the funniest thing I've seen an animal do that I owned. So the pig used to like to go into this bathroom where my mom had this big copper chest and it had nails like rivets all around it. And I apparently need to, we're going to go without video here for 1 second here. All right. Sorry. I had some quick technical difficulties. There was these rivets in the chest and the pig was in there. He liked to pull him out for whatever reason. So he's in there trying to pull it out, and I go in. His name was Brillo. And I'm like, Brillo, I'm standing in the doorway of the bathroom, and he turns around. The pigs do these really funny, quick 180s, and he makes like this Tim Allen Home Improvement sound, like, oh. And he turns around, and he like stares at me, and I'm like, Brillo, no. And then he starts walking towards me. I'm thinking, okay, he's going to come out of the bathroom. And he just shuts the door. That's the funniest thing that I've seen an animal do. Because it was like, oh, if I shut the door, he can't see me. I can do whatever I want. And the fact that that was his thought process was insane. Zuri is consistently ridiculous, consistently energetic. I don't know that there's one thing in particular that is like funny. But so sorry, I know that's not anything. She's just... I think the most fun one that I had was her She used to, at my old place in Ann Arbor, when we were sitting in the bedroom, she used to, if I wanted to said that there was something outside, she'd try to stand on her two hind legs to look outside, out the window, and try to stand as long as she could. That's probably the closest to it. Real question, do you think Ohio State has become so unbalanced offensively they struggle more with other Big Ten teams this year? I don't know that they're fully there yet, right? Like, there were injuries at the running back position, so that kind of, I think, precluded a lot of the unbalance. And I think that they're going to try to probably be more balanced to help Kyle McCord or whoever ends up being their quarterback out, I would guess. So I don't know. It's a little too premature for me to say yet. Dan Walton at 3D Walton, if you were a top 100 player, what five official visits would you take? I'd select Michigan, Texas, Florida, Georgia, and USC. I would want to see how different regions do things. I'd do Michigan, Texas, Alabama. I hate selecting Texas, but you're right on that. Oregon, and probably Ohio State, to be honest. I know. You could swap one of those maybe for like Oregon for Georgia, but I'm with you. I don't want to see different places as well. I'm not the one at William Cawthorn 9. Where do you see the progression of the program for the next 5 years? Well, I think a lot of it hinges on what happens this year. If they at least do what they're supposed to do this year and at least get to the college football playoff, I don't want to say win the national championship, because any team could catch fire. It could be one of the teams we know. It could be someone else. You don't know what that draw is going to be. I think that's going to be part of it, because if they can go and win a national championship, that's especially this year, that will really change recruiting. Now, the playoff changes next year. Michigan should be in a prime position to make the playoff every year, and then you see where they go from there. I think that So looking at maybe next year, I would see maybe like at least a little bit of a step back, but they could still very well make the playoff and make a run and all of that. And then after that, it's, I don't know. We'll see. I think that they're in a place where they can continue this trajectory for as long as Jim Harbaugh is around. I would say that. Where they can at least continue competing to at least be in that final four. I'm not 100% sure if they will win a national championship or not. This is the best shot, I think, this year, honestly. What's your favorite memory at the University of Michigan? It's completely not sports related. It would be being a part of the Imagination Films group, probably. That I had, and just the camaraderie with like Jamie Shank, and it's hard. A lot of the acting type things that I did, improv, filmmaking, all that kind of stuff. Those were some of my best memories. But the Imagination Film screening was probably the thing I looked forward to the most, especially when I did all these 24 spoofs. That would probably be the highlight. That and when I went out to LA to do my internship. So that wasn't at Michigan, but was at Michigan, but not at Michigan. Enchanted Pants at Enchanted Pants. Sam Webb versus EJ Holland. Who you got? Okay, if you can't answer that, how do you think team reporters should balance giving readers the unvarnished truth versus defending/protecting the program and their sources? Do you think of yourself as part of the team? Number one, no, I don't think of myself as part of the team at all. I am not. And none of us are. That aren't getting a paycheck from the University of Michigan. I think that you should protect your sources, right? And there, sometimes you get things that are a little too rosy and optimistic. You're probably not going to get things that are pessimistic. But I think that you should report the unvarnished truth. But you have to be sensitive both to the program as well as to the players and the parents. I don't understand why this continues to be a fight between Sam and EJ. I think I know both. I like both. They both are. I know why. It's just because that's the nature of when you're at two rival businesses doing the same thing, right? Like, there's always that competition. You know, you want to be seen as the one that is the most trustworthy and the one that is worthy of your dollar. So I just I I I I hope that they find a way to not have this very public quarrel. Let me just say it that way. Because they're both pros, and they're both incredible at what they do. James Kovalevsky at coach_Kovo. Do you have a prediction how Coach Prime's tenure as head coach at Colorado will go? I don't think it's going to be as good as people think. I think it'll be good, but I mean, I think it was different to be able to go into Jackson State and turn things around a little bit different. Now, the Pac-12 is probably the one conference you have a real good opportunity. And if they get some good quarterback play, I mean, Colorado was in the conference championship game in 2016. So, but USC is on the rise. Utah's a challenge. Oregon, Washington, those are all really good programs. Oregon State's been really good lately. UCLA's had its moments. Arizona State's had its moments. I think Jed Fish is doing a really good job at Arizona. So it could be really hard. It could be really easy. I don't know. I would bet that they're just kind of another one of those teams, to be honest. And like, yeah, he's recruiting really well. Guess who also recruits really well? USC. So Perry Mitchell at Perry Mitchell 08 on Behind the Uniform this week. Rod Moore mentioned McBurrows is a guy to watch out for, considering the hype he's gotten for pretty much every defender, even those that were drafted. Is it surprising we haven't heard more about him from the coaches? We've heard plenty about him from the coaches, but at the same time, it's like he'd been injured for years. And they're obviously really wanting to try out this Amarion Walker thing, because I think they think his ceiling is significantly higher. They think he could be like all-time great cornerback in all of college football. So that's kind of why that's going the way it's going. Jacob Chavaria at Chavaria. Are you buying all the Joe Milton hype? Is it just me? Or are you not as pumped for Michigan football because of their boring non-conference schedules and lack of competition in the conference until USC joins? With Joe Milton, I think that's a typical SEC thing, right? Like, I don't understand how suddenly it's like he's like super amazing. I say this as a Joe Milton fan and someone who still occasionally talks to Joe. But I think like if J.J. McCarthy was in the same, if he was starting at Tennessee and Tennessee had the season it did last year, and he was in Joe Milton's spot, they would be like, oh, J.J. McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy. So I think it's part of that hype. I think Joe is better than people give him credit for, but I don't know that it's like exactly the level that he's getting. He's going to have to prove it is really all it is. As far as the non-conference schedule, yeah, I hate it. It's fun watching a couple blowouts and thinking they've come in at good times, but I would much prefer at the same time to see a top-level team. But you know what? That changes next year. So DJN at Maze Rage 86, was Hunter Dickinson's legacy at Michigan, would he be booed or cheered hypothetically at Chrysler as a Jayhawk? I don't know. And that light died. We got cameras dying. We got lights dying. And that light's only is a replacement for the other light that won't work. It's all kinds of fun for if you're watching. Everything's changing. It's great. I don't know. Basically, is all I got there. I'm sorry. George Paul Lewis at G13 Lewis. Do you think Michigan can land Keon Coleman? I doubt it. I think he's probably going someplace like Auburn or something like that. But I highly, highly doubt he's going to end up at Michigan. I guess anything can happen. I just don't think that's going to happen. All right, we're going to continue on here in just a moment. All right, continuing on with the best of the rest. There's only a couple questions left, and we're already pretty much at time, so let's hurry up and do this here. My good friend over at On3, Clayton Safey at CSafe23. Do you mow your own lawn, rider, or push? I do mow my own lawn. I'm a Harbaugh type man, but I've only had a lawn for a month-ish. and my lawn is not big enough to have a rider. I'm downtown Fenton, you know. Like downtown by Red Fox, my cousin's old shop, soon to be the railway, Fenton Hotel, by the railroad tracks, all of that. There is no place around here that is big enough to have a riding mower. And if they do, they're just showing off. Actually, I think my neighbors have a riding mower. Their yard might be a little bigger than mine. It's hard to tell. It's completely fenced off. But it takes me a half hour pushing. Joshua Carlson at JoshWFF96 for 2025 recruiting class. Out of the four QB recruiting scenarios, who has the best odds? Underwood, Boley, McIntyre, none of the above. I'm going to go Underwood. I think that they're doing a really good job with him. And now that Jermaine Carell isn't at Belleville, I think that bodes really well for Michigan. No offense to Jermaine, because I don't understand the disconnect of how all that's all worked, because he's openly told me multiple times how big of a Michigan fan he is. But yet there's this weird friction. It's like, all right. Jamara at Jamara23732. Where do things stand with Aaron Scott, the DB from Ohio? I think Michigan's in a really good spot. They need to probably get him on campus for an official. Because I don't think he's had an official, right? I think that they're in a good spot. I think they're probably running second to Ohio State, but he didn't grow up an Ohio State fan, so they can really change things. I think the relationships he's built with the current commits really helps. Jordan Marshall, that really helps. So I think it's easier to pull him than Bryce West, who already has an official scheduled. Kernkat at Kernkat. I don't know if that's how that's pronounced, but what did JJ learn from the TCU game pick sixes? How will it make him better in 2023? I don't know for 100% certainty, but probably just what he's seeing from the defensive side, maybe a little bit of footwork, maybe a little just about decision making, knowing like, if you see this, don't go there type of thing. You know, I don't know 100% for sure, but I would guess that that's it. Utah Wolverine, you think Corum's overall workload, attempt snaps, et cetera, will decrease compared to last season? I hope so, because I know as much as you want to see him constantly, you've got other weapons you need to get involved. And it's better for the team if you have other weapons involved. It just is. All right, this is it for me. Very sleepy. Shake Moody Fan Club at Bill Gibbard. In the wake of Hunter publicly complaining about Michigan NIL, who makes how much on the football and basketball teams? Is this going to have sustainable damage? I don't know. That's not something that's disclosed. I mean, he said that he wasn't making six figures. I assumed he was. I think some are probably making six. Maybe even someone like Corum might be making seven. But that's also like multiple things. So, I don't know. Sustainable damage? No, I don't think it is. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will be back on Friday. Who knows with talking about what? Hopefully with working lights. We'll talk to you again soon. Peace.